dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and I'm joined, as I am each week, by Jeremy Ward. And Jeremy, I guess, is we're sitting here on a Sunday night recording and getting ready to come up on an SVC week where, you know, because of the rain, most teams are going to be going Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. A couple situations with some track meets, I understand, forcing some teams on paper, at least, to go Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And yeah, I guess, Jeremy, as I look at the forecast, though, 60% chance Monday, 100% chance Tuesday. That can obviously get mixed up and moved all around. And with some of those track meets, some people might have to push all the way back to next week. And I just wanted to get your take as we come not only into the second half of the league round here starting. And when I say second half of the league round, obviously, if we play four times this week in the league, that's almost the entire half right there. Just your thoughts as we come up on the final week before the sectional draw. What do you have your eye on in terms of the league races, softball, baseball, and how some people maybe could be hurt or helped by getting some baseball or softball in before they go in there to the voting room next week?
You know, when you look at the standings in baseball and softball, for each of those, you've got teams that have played 15 and 16 games. And then you've got a few teams that have only played maybe 12 games. So pretty good discrepancy there already. So if you would happen to lose a few more due to weather, you know, you go in danger of heading to the draw with fewer games than you anticipated, fewer wins than you anticipated, maybe not the matchups that you wanted. You know, all running together after the draw. It's just, you know, it's different for each individual team. And, you know, depending on how you're trying to position yourself heading to the draw, you just may not have a whole lot of say in it. So it certainly looks like tomorrow there might be a few windows. And if we don't get a large amount of rain, we might be able to get some games in, which I think would be critical, because if we lose tomorrow and then what happened to lose Tuesday, you know, that could really put some teams in a bind.
Well, there's no question. We've talked about it before. It probably, well, it definitely influences baseball more than it would softball from a right. Pitching perspective. But, you know, the one thing real quick I wanted to touch on, because we'll talk more about it in some upcoming shows as we're going to do some specials on our softball draw and our baseball draw, is the impact the rain could have on both sides really in your sectional draw. I know one of the biggest things we come up on, and I wanted to get your opinion just to share with the fans. If you go into the voting room and you have, say, an SVC team that's played 16, 17 times, but maybe a Southern Hills League or an SOC team, sitting there at, you know, 4-4, how do you get a fair way of distinguishing between a team, say, that's, you know, even if they're under 500 at 10-12, but then you have a 4-4 team there? Is that kind of a flaw in the system? How do we handle that situation?
Well, I don't know if it's a flaw in the system. It certainly makes it difficult to assess where everybody is. And I know a lot of times, I think you made a good point with the Southern Hills League and the smaller division of the SOC, what you run into sometimes is the facilities are, you know, maybe public facilities, maybe parks where, you know, they don't have as have the opportunity to work on those fields or to get them ready. And sometimes you're at the mercy completely of the weather. But when it comes down to the draw, I tell you what, I think it's very important that you do what you can to schedule those teams. If you have teams in those conferences in your sectional, you need to schedule them, because you don't need second and third hand knowledge of where these teams are and the same about you. I think it's important to make sure that you do get those teams on the schedule. I think for the Division III teams, it's not that big of a deal.
Right.
It's not quite.
Have some common opponents and things.
Yeah, I think the pressure is more on that league, on the outside leagues, as opposed to the SVC. But you know, when you go out in Division IV with Paint Valley, or in Division II with Uniota, it's a lot more difficult to compare apples to apples. And you know, some people put a lot of weight on who you're playing. Others put a lot of weight on what division the teams you're playing. And depending on how you look at it, you know, I think people can come out and say, well, you know, you got three losses, but they're all three to lower division teams. We're not going to put you ahead of somebody that may have six losses to higher division teams. And that happens, and I've seen it happen.
Well, Jeremy, I'll tell you what, we had an email this week asking us to stick to spring. It was certainly interesting, and we will do our best to follow the order on this week's show. Well, Jeremy, obviously the pressure is starting to pick up in the SVC. As a lot of us like to say, they don't hand out the money to the back nine in terms of our golf analogy. And I guess that as we get down the stretch here, these next 3 to 4 games are going to tell us a lot about how the standings are going to stack up. And obviously, as we just mentioned in our intro there, it's going to have a lot to do with probably the fate of some SVC teams come postseason. And the email I'm talking about reads, guys, I love the show. I probably have listened to every show from the start. Wow, thank you. It says, but I would love to hear a show focus more on spring sports from start to finish, like baseball and softball. Give me top five toughest outs in the league. Who are league's top pitchers? Who are the toughest people to coach against, etc. Thanks, love the show. Would love what you do for the SVC. Well, again, appreciate that with a longtime listener. And I think we talked about this before, Jeremy. What's so unique about the spring? Obviously, this person's saying they listen to each show. But I do think we have a lot of unique listeners, unique meaning that they're baseball, softball fans in the spring. I know I talked to a couple baseball people out at the VA as I was just enjoying kind of the weekend off with Paint Valley's prom. Went out and did a little scouting, did a little just kind of watching some good baseball, really relaxing, taking in some of the fine food there at the VA facility, and talking to 2-3 people. They talked about the show and talked about different things, and just always and appreciate some of that feedback. And so I got to thinking about this email, and I thought, well, let's just kind of keep the show freelance this week and start with this email and just kind of talk back and forth. I guess I'll throw this at you first, Jeremy, and anytime you want to throw something back at me, baseball, feel free. The thing I got to thinking about as I listened back to last week's show, we were talking about developing the elite pitcher, and we talked about the command, particularly the command of the fastball, and then developing some of the off-speed stuff, a third pitch. And as I started looking through, and I think of all the big games Lytle's pitched, Paint Valley uses Newland and Riley. I know Piketon uses a pair of pitchers, obviously Blevins, Rosher, and then Gino there. I guess they're all very good, obviously, or their teams wouldn't be able to accomplish what they've accomplished into the top half of the league or some of the tournament success they have. Is there a particular quality in one or two of them that maybe make them unique to the others? Or do they all have something that kind of just makes them very talented in their own way?
Well, that is interesting. I do think there's a unique quality to each of the styles of the pitchers. And I think probably most interestingly enough, really the three pitchers that have stood out this year, I think with what Newland's done, what Brooke Blevins has done, and what Morgan Geno has done, have just been phenomenal. I think what you've seen is with Blevins and Geno this year, I think they're both better than they have been in the past, and it wasn't like they weren't pretty good to start with. I think they've commanded the strike zone. I think they're using different parts of the strike zone where when they were younger, they may have just focused on getting batters to chase pitches up or getting batters to chase pitches away. I think they're able to move the ball in and out a little more effectively and become pitchers more than throwers. And particularly Morgan Geno, I think, has really separated herself this year because she has commanded the strike zone so much it's been almost impossible to score off of her. And even the game that they lost to Westfall, hits were at a premium. And, then I think you get Rauschert, and she's just been able to manage the game. And I think overall, Westfall's strengths is a little more rounded defensively and offensively, and not taking anything away from her. But I don't think there's near the pressure on her to be.
Let me interrupt you there real quick. I wanted to ask you that comparison. You mentioned the defense there. Is there some similarities in the Westfall defense being a year older, a year more athletic now, to maybe the Uniota situation a year ago? I know a lot of people talked about Uniota's ability to really field the base, or excuse me, the softball last year. Is there some similarities now that this Westfall group's a year older, maybe a little bit more athletic?
Oh, certainly, without a question. When you talk about the athletes in the corner outfield spots for Westfall, they wouldn't be playing corner outfield spots for anybody else. And then you talk about the experience that those players have, and really just the talent throughout. I think position for position, they can push pretty much anybody in the league to, if not, being the best, being one of the top two or three players at each position. And I don't think anybody else can even really come close to that, in fairness, maybe at one or two spots, but not throughout the diamond like Westfall can. And I think that makes them a little more like Uniota last year. And I think where you might get maybe Blevins was overshadowed a little bit last year because of that defense. You can see the difference in when Uniota can only score 3, 4, 5 runs as compared to being able to put up double digits like they were last year, it changes the way you pitch. You don't have that cushion. And I think you're seeing Rauschert do that. She doesn't have as many walks as she's had in the past. She doesn't feel as much pressure because she's got a defense behind her and an offense that's going to score runs. On the flip side, Morgan Geno is just bared down and is even tougher. And more effective because I think, as good as they've been, they have trouble scoring runs, and she's figured out a way to get the hitters in the leg out consistently.
Right. Well, I tell you, the other thing, I guess, is as I look at the email here, if we flip over to the offensive side of things, maybe look at some leadoff hitters, some RBI spots, consistency. What's something that jumps out at you as a key offensive factor in this year's SVC race on the softball side?
Execution, really. Having an approach at the plate when you're facing quality pitchers, you have to have an idea of what you're doing. You've got to be able to execute. You've got to be able to get bunts down. I haven't seen that done on a consistent basis. And I think then that just makes the pitchers even more effective. I think just the ability to hit behind runners, to not strike out in big spots, to be able to get your bunts, to be able to move runners and have an idea, maybe to work the count. I haven't seen that done as well this year as maybe last year all the way around. And I think that's why you see so many games where, the pitchers are just pretty much overwhelming the hitters. And I think part of that's the depth of talent, with the hitters. But, it obviously has a lot to do with the pitchers as well. Now, when we look at that, Shane, and we talked about all the losses on the baseball side of as far as innings pitched and, all league caliber pitchers. But yet we've still had a lot of competitive games, and we've still had a lot of low scoring games. We've had those blow ups, and we've had the big innings. But I think, you can talk a little more about this, but the most interesting thing about the baseball league is how it seems like with these inexperienced pitchers that everything changes in that sixth and seventh inning, and maybe they just can't finish the game. Maybe you have to go to another arm, but it just seems like there's been a lot of late inning comebacks.
Well, I think that's fair, and I think a lot of it is where is that depth. You're talking about pitch counts, you're talking about different things. Is, you know, in a lot of situations, if you had certain arms you could go to, but if let's say your top couple arms have maybe hit the 95, 100 pitch mark on a Monday and Tuesday night, sometimes you're a little bit, you know, unsure, should I bring them back on a Wednesday in a closing opportunity? So a lot of times I think you're seeing that because pitching staffs are forced to maybe push out to their number four, sometimes even number five, as if you're playing in four straight games and, you know, four nights. I think what I've seen, Jeremy, in baseball is I've seen a lot of the depth of the pitching improve as the year goes out. And I think a lot of it is just some of these young kids pitching varsity for the first time. I think you've seen a nice adjustment period as they start to make their fourth and fifth appearance, if that makes sense. I think the first right. time they're coming out, they're, you know, you're a little bit overwhelmed sometime at the varsity level. You know, you're used to junior high and JV, you know, on 0-2, if you miss your spot, a lot of times you just throw it by them or whatever, where at the varsity level, I think I know one big thing we've really seen is the amount of damage being done on 0-2 and 1-2 pitches. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of that's just experience. I think a lot of times is you get out there at third and fourth time and your catcher gets a little bit more familiar with you. And I guess I look through the elite pitching and the pitching at the top half of the staffs have been really, really good. The Wilson right. kid at Westfall has been solid. I know Swack Hammer at St. Trey. Sarver was outstanding in his last outing for Huntington. I know McCloy has been just super in his last three times out. Dye at Southeastern. I know the Hendershot kid threw a shutout against Wilson over the weekend. It's just a lot of depth. Jordan down at Piketon. I'm sure I'm missing some. And you know what happens too? Sometimes, like you take the Staten kid at Uniota, a lot of times these kids are getting, when you become, we talked about this in our preview show, when you become the number one, where maybe you've right. been a four or five in the past, now all of a sudden you're getting the Monday, Friday, you're getting some of the best teams in the league, where maybe in the past you were getting a Wednesday or a Thursday night or maybe a Saturday back end of a doubleheader. There's a big difference in that. There right. really is.
Well, so, let me ask you this, because we talked about this in the preview a little bit too, and I know you and I have had this conversation multiple times, the difference between, you know, hitting 350 in the 7-hole and hitting 350 in the 3-hole is entirely different as a hitter, and that holds true as well for a pitcher. But when you move to that number one spot, do you think the credibility of being your team's ace, especially in a league like ours, actually can be helpful if you embrace that role? Because sometimes the hitters are like, oh man, we're facing their best tonight, and maybe they tighten up a little bit.
Well, I think that's true, because the name that was slipping my mind there, I was looking at the balance throughout the league, there was obviously Shepherd at Dina, and he's a great example of what you're talking about. I think because he really established himself as that late in the year last year, and then with the tournament success that they had, I think I've seen situations this year where, you know, he's come, you know, obviously started games and been successful, or as he's come in the middle of the game. I know I scouted a game earlier this year that was a complete slugfest. He came into it in the middle innings, and it was like the entire confidence of the Adina team, as soon as they took the lead, it was almost like you could just sense that, oh, okay, game's over. Right. You know, and it necessarily wasn't in terms of the opportunity that Southeastern still had, but it was just that confidence. I don't even know if it's as much the other team sometimes is when you become a true ace, it's a confidence that I see in your own teammates. When the lineup card's posted and it says Shepherd with a number one beside it, or a Sarver with a number one beside it, there's a sense of confidence that just comes over the team in terms of the way they feel about their opportunity of winning that night. And I guess that's what makes softball so unique, is because, you know, you should kind of have that every night, I guess, in terms of, right. you know, feeling that way coming in. Now I will say we posted our Adina Sports Medicine SVC stats for baseball. We're still working on trying to get some softball collected, but I appreciate all 8 SVC baseball coaches getting them in. I do want to say on our sponsor there, listening to your coach is one thing. Listening to your pain is everything. Adena Sports Medicine, you can request an appointment with Adena Sports Medicine by calling 740-779-4598. Appreciate all they do for the website. But, you know, Jeremy, as I look down through here on the ERA, you're getting all the way down to the top 15, and you're still well under 3 there on the ERA. And that just kind of lets you know that, you know, that there's a lot of kids that have the ability to go on the mound, throw strikes, and if you'll make the plays behind them, can give them their team a chance to win. But I will say, as I go down to the strikeouts seem to be a little down this year, which again tells me there's a little bit more pressure being put on the defense. You know, our league just said goodbye to a Farmer, a Stone Rock, an Arledge, a Thompson, you know, all the way down the line. So the strikeout numbers aren't as high as I've seen them. On softball, let me return to you there. I've seen some pretty high strikeout numbers. Do you think that has a lot to do with maybe the defenses being a little bit better than expected in terms of maybe in the middle of the pack?
Well, I think the strikeout numbers have a lot to do with the pitchers, but I do think that, you know, just the sheer fact that Paint Valley's pitching has been as good as it has been, and clearly their pitching has put them in the top half, and I think there's a pretty there's more of a drop, I guess, to the bottom half teams now, and that is the difference, because, you know, it's just almost shut down. And you talk about strikeouts, you can see the difference it's made for Paint Valley. All of a sudden, when you don't have to get 15, 16, 17 outs a game,
right,
it's a lot easier to defend. You know, and we've talked about that before as well. But, you know, the one thing that you see with the strikeouts is that chances are at least 2 of the 3 nights in league play, you're going to see somebody that's averaging double digits in strikeouts. And it's possible that you might see 5 in a row. Now,
right,
when you think about that, it kind of leads me back to the 5 toughest out. I think that's a great question, and we should talk about that a little bit later on. But is that wears on you? I mean, your focus as a hitter, it's just not possible to be locked in for an extended amount of time. And there's going to be somebody that you just don't pick up the ball as well from. And, you know, maybe you feel like you picked the ball up pretty well against Morgan Geno, but you don't, you know, pick up the ball from, you know, say Brooke Blevins at a lower angle.
Right.
And I could see that, like, where Blevins, she doesn't strike you as a power pitcher, but her movement and her velocity kind of surprises you. She's not as violent with her motion as the other ones in the league, who are very active and they have a lot going on. You know, I know in talking to Emily, the one thing that gets her is the ones that are slow getting going and they get really violent. Well,
yeah.
Other people, they like smooth throughout. You know, it's just that comfort level. So when you have so many strikeout pitchers, I think you're going to see even the best hitters, even those top 5 toughest outs, they're going to have trouble with somebody, and they're going to have a game where they strike out 2 or 3 times, and that doesn't mean they're not a good hitter. It's just, you know, we'll go back to that theme. It's pressure. It's just, there's only so much pressure, and sometimes you just got to tip your cap and say, man, I'm just going to have to come back and be better tomorrow.
Right. You know, you started to mention about the 5 toughest outs, and I got to thinking, I could list so many different names. I know probably right off the bat, 3 or 4 of them would be right in the Adena lineup, which makes sense, you know, in terms of why they're winning the league by a couple games, with Shepherd and Kunkel and Harper and so forth. I know Henny comes to mind, Dye, McFadden. A couple kids from Southeastern beyond Dye there with Triplett and McKee, and is having nice years. But I guess the characteristic, other than being able to hit, I guess there was 2 things that jumped out at me, and I wanted to see if you thought there was a correlation in softball, Jeremy. The 2 things that really make for a tough out, other than the obvious of being very talented as a hitter, would be knowledge of the strike zone and speed. if you think about it in high school, if you hit top half the baseball and you hit the ball on the ground, a kid like Anthony McFadden or a kid like, Dye and some of these kids, they're going to pick up an extra couple hits a week just putting pressure on the left side of your infield. Also, that knowledge of the strike zone, if you get a high school kid that really understands the strike zone and is really sitting on that one pitch and really won't expand the strike zone at all until maybe at least the two strike situation, they become very difficult to pitch to. I just wondered, do you see a correlation in those two things when you think of some of the toughest outs on the softball side?
Well, that's interesting because it's very different in softball with the hitters in our league. If I go through and think of, man, who do we have trouble getting out? I can go back, to junior high and summer and all the at-bats that I've seen some of these girls. And, I feel like Adrian Dunn is an extremely tough out. Obviously, Gina Wright's a tough out. Tackett from Westfall is a tough out. Emily Ward's an extremely tough out. She sees a lot of pitches, and there's kind of where I'll go. And I take some heat sometimes for not giving her any pub, being my daughter. But the one thing, and some of the guys were talking about this the other day, it's like, at the end of the day, it may be a ground out to second base, but when you look at the end of the game and she's seen 6, 7, 8 pitches every single at bat,
absolutely,
sometimes that helps turn that lineup over. Maybe the next player walks or the next pitch they make a mistake. And I watch Morgan Gino with the same way, foul off, just completely be overmatched against Blevins this past week for 3 or 4 pitches, and then she fouls them off, and then she rips one. And
right,
that to me isn't something that I see that much. I think Tackett hits extremely well early in the count. I think Dunn hits extremely well early in the count. Gina Wright hits extremely well early in the count, which puts the pressure on the pitchers to not give in early. Maybe you want to extend the zone on the first pitch against those types of hitters because they're not going to let you get them behind. Right. And they have that confidence to get on it early. And I think it's almost interesting that you see in some of those hitters, Elena Lytle's very good at fouling off pitches. I think when you talk about hitters that can go deep in counts, there aren't that many of them on the softball side. And honestly, back to the strikeout numbers, can you afford against strikeout pitchers to get deep when you know they can put you away?
Right. Well, and in baseball, it makes even more sense because of the pitch count. There's a lot of time you just talked about a lot of comebacks late in the game. I think a lot of it is good two strike hitting. If you're able to have an at bat that goes 8, 9 pitches, even if it ends in a strikeout or a ground out or whatever, or a 2-out error that a defense makes in baseball, a lot of times, even if that pitcher pitches around that error and gets out of it, you just cost that pitcher an inning.
Right.
Because they might have had to throw another 14, 15 pitches. So I love that point that you make because I think it correlates over. The last thing, Jeremy, before we move on, that as a coach got me thinking, and I know you're a big-time student of the game and you really watch a lot of styles and different things. It was interesting to me the toughest people to coach against. And I think we have awesome coaches on the baseball side in the SVC. I really do. And there are unique things that – each of them kind of like to do. When you get with a Ron Allen, his Ain Trace team is going to come out of their shoes on the early fastball in the count, looking to hit the fastball. They get ahead 2-0, they're not taking, they're coming out of their shoes on a 2-0 fastball. They're not going to bunt as much, but they will like to hit and run, do a lot of things. They usually play for the big inning, that type of thing, where you'll get other coaches throughout the league that'll put a lot of pressure on you. I think of a Trevor Thomas. He has a lot of variety in his offense in terms of some of the things he likes to do. I know Huntington's always been a team. They have a first-year coach, Coach Smith, doing a really nice job. I know that they've always had the identity with Coach Carroll there for a while. They were going to steal. And if you threw out a guy in the first inning and you threw out a guy in the second inning and he got the right guy on in the third inning, he's going again. It's just one of those things. That's what they do. And I see a lot of that aggressiveness that Coach Smith's bringing on as well there. So, I could go down through all the different coaches and think of some of the different things they do. On the softball side of things, Does that strategy change a little bit in terms of, you know, how much, for example, just because I don't get to watch very much softball, with the great pitching and the dominant strikeout numbers, do you see a lot of coaches trying to, say, bunt a kid over after a leadoff hit, leadoff walk, those types of things? Or do you see a tendency sometimes with more of these lineups to kind of let them swing free and play more for the crooked number?
Well, I think you do see a lot of bunt attempts, and I would wager that very few teams go back to back innings without a bunt attempt. Some teams don't go an inning without a bunt attempt, but it's an interesting scenario, because with the pitching, especially with the movement. You know, you've got rise ball pitchers, but you've got pitchers with a ridiculous amount of movement in the leg, which makes it tough to bunt. And everybody thinks, well, you know, you get down on your order, you just do what you can, you just try to get the bunt down. But it's easier said than done. It's extremely difficult to bunt a rise ball. It's extremely difficult to bunt a pitch that's running away from you. And, you know, when you get hitters that are maybe inexperienced or not as proven or successful hitters, they've got to know the strike zone awfully well. And sometimes you get yourself backdoored because you try to bunt early in the count and you extend the strike zone with those bunt attempts, and it really, you know, takes the bat out of your hand and then subsequently puts pressure on the top of your order to have to swing away to get people on base. So, you know, it's kind of interesting that if the pitching is good enough and they understand, you know, hey, if we're looking to bunt here, we're not just going to, you know, let you put it in play and take the out. We're going to make it really tough on you. We're going to run it up the ladder, and we're going to run it out away from you, and we're going to make you prove that you can recognize the strike zone first. And I've seen just a ridiculous number of unsuccessful bunt attempts this year, and I attribute a lot of that to the pitchers.
Oh, I know there's no question about that. I tell you, this has been a really fun discussion. We really want to encourage the fans to get involved. As you're out watching games this week and you're looking for some of these different things, let us know who we need to be talking about here. Facebook, Twitter, admin1@svcsportzone.com is our inbox. You can also call 740-569-3254. It'll give you about a minute to leave a message there. Let us know some of the hitters, some of the fielders, some of the, you know, maybe a catcher that you see doing a nice job. Maybe someone's really tough in an RBI spot. Just give us a comment or even a question, and we'll talk about it here on SVC Sports Talk. So great email, great first half of the show here, just to kind of get us talking about a lot of different kids. Sure, we missed some kids throughout, and again, that's why we want you to let us know, and we'll try to get those kids mentioned on a future show. Well, Jeremy, I'll tell you what, let's go to extra innings. This week we'll return to you, Jeremy, taking the softball, and I will follow with a baseball response. So here we go. Let's go to extra innings.
What percentage would you use to predict the likelihood of Westfall softball and Edina baseball winning an outright title?
I'm going to go bold, 90% for both of them.
I'm gonna put it right around this early in the process. I'll still get about 75%.
With a sectional draw less than a week away, what word or phrase would you use to describe the outlook of the SVC as a whole in the postseason?
What have you done for me lately?
I'm going to say battle-tested and dangerous.
One fan wants to know in the inbox this week, what is the toughest thing about rebuilding a baseball or softball program?
Changing the culture.
I'm going to say a 4-year commitment. Well, again, fans, just as I said earlier, you can let us know Facebook, Twitter, inbox, or that telephone number I had thrown out there. Again, that was 740-569-3254 on any of these things that we're talking about. And, Jeremy, I want to go right back to the top. I guess when I was looking at, you know, a 3 out of 4 chance, you know, we're talking Westfall softball there, still chasing the gold with Zane Trace right behind them. Edina baseball has the 2-game lead, and I guess what I like if I'm Edina is the fact that there's so many teams in that mix. Westfall at 5-3, and then Paint Valley, Unio, to Pike, and Zane Trace, all with four losses. So they're three back in the loss column, and what you're going to get, if the first half was any indication there, is you're just going to get teams just beating up on each other. Right. Realistically, I just don't know that Edina is going to find their way down to four losses. So, you know, you just have to wait and see here. If Edina is able to take care of business in two, three games, obviously rain could play a factor in that. But again, you got to like where you're at if you're Edina, just from the standpoint of even if you do drop a couple, the chances of someone just running the table through a half of this league in baseball would be really, really impressive. Now, on the softball side, I'll throw it to you, and feel free to jump in there on the baseball too, Jeremy. But on the softball side, I guess, you know, Zane Trace still controls, you know, their own destiny in terms of having that head-to-head opportunity. But as you mentioned last week, if Westfall is able to survive a couple of these games here in the next week or so, they kind of are downhill from there.
Yeah, I actually, you know, chiming in on the baseball a little bit, that's exactly, you know, the way I looked at Edina with a two-game lead, but with teams, you know, two through seven, only two games back, there's just too much opportunity for that same, you know, basically pattern to continue from the first half, where you just don't see any of those teams flipping it over and running the table from here on out. And even if they did, that may only give them a tie. So, you know, I think Edina is the best suited if there's, you know, four games in a week. I think they're best suited, you know, to play a makeup type schedule. So I think it's really advantageous where they're sitting now. As far as softball goes, I had a feeling about Westfall early on, and I feel even stronger about that. Some of their hitters in the middle of the order are starting to produce. They're hitting home runs up and down their order. You know, barring just them feeling like, you know, the pressure gets to them, I just don't see them not getting at least a share, even if Zane Trace was to get them. And I just feel like, you know, Zane Trace has walked a fine line of one run games, and they've been able to overcome that. But I think it's going to be difficult for them to, you know, close out the season without losing again either.
It's funny you mentioned one run games, Jeremy, because that takes me to my second answer, you know, battle tested and dangerous. I know last year was a really, really good SVC league that ended in a really disappointing postseason. I know Edina had a nice little mini run there. But again, Edina, Westfall, Paint Valley get stuck in the same bracket and beat up on each other last year. And then I know Huntington, Zane Trace, Pike, and all felt like there at the VA they had an opportunity to win in advance, and they weren't able to do that. Even Southeastern Uniota just had some tough spots. So I look at battle tested and dangerous. I think if you look around the area, maybe the expectations aren't as high this year. But if you look at having your ace on the mound and you're in your tournament lineup, the SVC, as we just talked about throughout the entire league, has played so many close games, so many extra inning games, that I just feel like teams are going to be well prepared to play in a tournament setting. And I think with maybe the expectations being a little bit lower in the eyes of many, not just in our league, but maybe in the surrounding area, that some of these SVC teams can become really, really dangerous in baseball. Now in softball, I don't know if they're going to fly under the radar as much there, because it's probably the opposite. Do you see a little bit of an opposite side of this in terms of the expectations being maybe a little bit higher in softball? Is that fair, unfair? How do you see that?
You know, I'm not sure that, I think the expectations are pretty high. I think as you talk to people around, they recognize, especially in Division III, that you're going to have, you know, at least three teams from the SVC that will have a pretty good shot at, you know, being competitive at the district level and beyond. Same can be said about the SOC. I think it's very difficult for those other conferences where, you know, they just don't have the competition night in and night out to be able to show up and, you know, compete, like you say, battle tested. I just don't think that they've seen the pitching that is, you know, night after night in the SOC or the SVC. I think, again, what gets lost sometimes, and maybe this is me being a nerd of smorts, but the changes to the district format and the number of teams getting out plays a huge role in this. And
sure,
that's why, you know, when I talk about what have you done for me lately, you know, we had a little bit of disappointment with the boys last year, but coupled with that, now we have a Division II where only one team gets out, and that's going to be extremely difficult for Unieto. Division III, you know, Paint Valley drops the D4, which I think will help them. In terms of the fact that the D3 sectionals this year, there's only two district champions. So it's going to be even tougher to get out of the district this year. And like you said, with, you know, our teams are definitely going to be battle tested. But you look, Waverly is now in D3 and they're in the same sectional. And obviously with their number one on the mound, they're extremely good. You know, we're going to run the risk of a bunch of SVC versus SVC matchups in the sectional, and then even more probably at the district level. So it's just going to be, I think, a little more difficult this year to have good representation, because I'm just afraid we're going to have to beat up on each other. But then again, you know, like you said, we could flip the switch from last year and those kids grow up the second half of the season, and maybe we could have fantastic representation by the league. And on the softball side, I just think with three division champions, three district champions in Division III, it really makes for an unbelievable district tournament that's going to be held at Unieto. And then you're going to talk about three very talented teams, no matter who gets out of those, heading to the regional to play against each other, and defending champion Bloom Carroll more than likely. So just some fantastic softball to look forward to.
Well, there's no question. We'll take a look at that on some upcoming shows here as we're going to preview the draw after next week, and or preview the postseason following the draw next week. And it takes us to our last one. This is something we've talked about off and on the show. In this particular email, I had shortened it because I put it in extra innings, but the email was kind of a little bit more detailed than I made it sound here. It was talking about the softball a lot of times having, you know, just that one dominant pitcher, and it says, you know, it looks like the one arm can take a program from being pretty bad to really, really good overnight. And it just asks, is it something as simple as that, or are there some other things? I know you talked about the culture. I talked about the 4-year commitment in terms of spring sports. I think it's so important to have kids be able to go through the process, you know, go through the JV process, get to the varsity, go through the learning curve, get your experience. And I think teams that, you know, can play the junior senior loaded lineup are going to be better for it. That's not to say there's not really good freshmen and sophomores in the league throughout, but I think they're going to only be that much better as they get older. So I think the 4-year commitment is a really important thing to bringing stability to your group. And I think a lot of times when you have that age factor, I think that's where, as I talked about earlier in the SVC sports talk season, that's where some of that depth of role players can really come into play. Talk to us a little bit about the culture that you mentioned, Jeremy, and then just what you're looking at as you build a baseball or softball program.
Well, I think there's, you know, we talk about the differences between baseball and softball. We talk about the differences, you know, even in basketball with boys and girls. It's much easier to turn a program around, I think, in girls' sports because of the fact that one player can make such a huge difference. I think it happens in basketball. And when I say that, it's not just the impact of the one player, whether it be a pitcher, a point guard, a shooting guard, whatever it might be. But normally what you have when you have a extremely talented athlete in a particular class, it excites that whole class. So you get more depth in that group, and you get kids that are used to a particular role, but most importantly are excited about winning. And, you know, I agree with you completely with, you know, a 4-year plan, but sometimes, you know, in girls, maybe it takes a couple years to really accelerate productivity, wins and losses, that sort of thing. But I think the range of potential is much larger in girls sports, meaning that you can go from winning 5-6 games, have an extremely talented class or a player with some supporting role players, and get to that point where you're in every game, you're winning almost every game, and the ones you're losing tight. And you can get to that 20 win plateau. Whereas I think in baseball, again, with the fact that, you know, the pitching is so different, one dominant pitcher might only get you 6 wins during a season. Whereas in softball, it might get you 20. And that's we've just seen that happen time after time. And the same thing, it has the same impact when a coach leaves or when a player leaves. In softball, it seems to fall off a lot quicker than it does in baseball for the very same reason.
Well, there's no question about it. And we continue on. This happened to do more with softball. It did mention baseball and softball. And our final look to the inbox, Jeremy, there's an email that was interested in our talk last week about umpiring. And it was saying that they were wondering why we see the same people doing the same teams all the time. I thought the league had an assigner. If the games are rained out, does this fall on the athletic directors? Is this the problem? Finally, what is the key, in your opinion, to being a good umpire? So a lot of different things going on here in this email. Yeah, I can't really comment on why we see the same people doing the same teams all the time, you know, if that is taking place. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the year during some other seasons of SVC Sports Talk back in the fall and winter. I think, sure, that is probably something the assigner, some of the ADs maybe need to be aware of. But at the same time, I think, and you can jump in here as a basketball official and tell me I'm wrong, Jeremy, if I am, sometimes it has to be the umpire saying, oh, hold on now, I've had that team 2 or 3 times this week, that may not be a good idea. So there's some of that on their end as well.
Right.
I think the one thing I'll say about the assigner, and then you take the question, I think I've always been a big person in education or in coaching saying it's people, not programs. You know, you can sit and talk about an incredible program or an incredible idea in a meeting and have it look really good on paper, but you still need people to execute it. So there probably is some communication that maybe does need to take place. And I do think it's important to have that communication coming at a lot of different angles to make sure some of these things get cut off, if you will, before they happen. Yeah, I think as a coach myself, I honestly don't think the umpiring is that bad. You know, do I have some umpires I disagree with? Sure. But I think there's a lot of good umpires out there, too. And it's just a matter of trying to get more and more of them involved, because I think, you know, a good umpire a lot of times is just a person that's going to come out and give you a real quality effort and attitude and work real hard for you for 2.5 hours.
But what you have, I think, is a logistics in baseball and softball that you don't have in the other sports. You're talking about starting at 5 o'clock. And that's why in the SVC you see crews that only work at Piketon, because they're Scioto or Pike County based.
They get there, right? Yeah.
You have, guys at Westfall that you don't see in the interior of the league because, you know, they're coming from, you know, maybe the Pickaway County chapters or maybe from, someplace in the northern part. And then I think at Paint Valley, you'll see some guys that might share duties in SHL games or maybe stretch the western boundaries a little bit at Paint Valley or at Edina. And then essentially, and I know what they're talking about, when you come to Uniota, Zane Trace, even Southeastern and Huntington, you see pretty much the same crews going between those four schools throughout the year. And you do wonder sometimes if who that's bad for. I mean, it's not just the fact that they may make a mistake. Well, obviously they're going to make mistakes. The kids are going to make mistakes and this and that. But the fact of the matter is, when you see one crew for half your games, there's a good chance something's going to happen during that stretch of 8 games that you're not going to agree with, or, you know, the coach is going to say, or the fans are going to say, that the umpire, you know, kind of gets under their skin. And I just don't know why you put yourself in that position. Logistics is a big part of it. I've had a lot of guys that I've talked to that, in Scioto County, that ask me about, man, I'd love to get back up in the SVC, let your ADs know, or could you spread the word that we're, you know, that we're still working and we'd like to get up there, you know, but it's tough for us to get up there by 5 o'clock. Well,
yeah.
You know, that, I think it comes into that. But as far as the rain out part of this goes, Shane, you know, I think for the most part, the ADs and the assigner, they work together and they try to do the best that they can.
And I will say it's not as easy as you think. If a game gets canceled Monday night and you're turning around moving it to Tuesday night and your umpire's already had a game on Tuesday night, you're sitting there with everybody rescheduling on Tuesday night, trying to find people for baseball and JV baseball and softball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds as just picking up a phone and giving someone a call. I mean, there's times as a junior high AD, and I know you can talk about this, there's times, you know, you'd have officials cancel on your whatever, and you might have made 30 phone calls and come up empty. I also know that sometimes umpires call and get their own replacement. So sometimes people show up that the AD or the assigner had no control over. So there's a lot of different factors there that go on.
Well, and I think what people have to understand is that the SVC, their league schedule and their policies are unique to the SVC. They're not the way it's done in other conferences. So, you've got guys that might work league games in the SVC, but then they're working, we have conferences where, you know, we're playing against in the TVC and the SOEOAL, where they're on very strange schedules and they're playing Monday, Thursday, or they're playing, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, or Tuesday, Thursday some weeks and Monday, Wednesday some weeks. So it isn't easy. And I think you see a lot of SVC teams that will, you know, have Tuesday non-league games scheduled and the umpires scheduled. And the good part of that is, you've already got the umpires ready to go when you have your makeup. So that is somewhat beneficial, but it certainly can be a mess, no doubt.
Well, fans, as I look back through the inbox here, just to wrap up the show this week, see a little track rundown. I know the Paint Valley, Andy Haynes was just this not too long ago here. He had Carlon Cox over at Huntington with a medalist with 4 second place finishes. Newman continues to be outstanding for Zane Trace on the boys side. Those two were actually voted our Herbie Strange State Farm Insurance Athlete of the Week. So for their fine performance there at Paint Valley, Zane Trace boys get the win there as Newman lifts them to that win. Hillsborough just edges out Zane Trace and Adina. I thought it was very impressive, Jeremy, with Adina's ability up against Zane Trace. Obviously, that's not always an indication once you throw in a Uniode and some other schools into the league meet. But again, Adina's ability to score at a meet of that size was pretty impressive to me. And then another email comes in on stats talking about how they love the stat pages and.
Right. Shane, coaches. let me jump in real quick on the track, because I was somebody was telling me yesterday actually that Trevor Detillion, I think, broke a meet record held by Garen Varis at Chillicothe last week. And anytime that you can throw that out there, that's pretty impressive stuff in the discus. So you know, like I said, we don't always get as much information as we like from the track, but when we do, we certainly want to get it out there to everybody.
Well, we do, and I'm glad you said that, because, again, those are the types of things we'd love to post. I know I've been getting a lot of unique things into the website. No Coach Blue sent me a thing in. Congratulations to the Westfall Lady Mustangs basketball team on their academic honor. You can see that right on the front page of the website. Staying with the Westfall theme, I know Coach Thomas is doing a neat thing to honor Coach Morris there from Madison Plains and Westfall. I know his son Joe Morris played there not too long ago. You talk about tough outs. I know that's one guy I didn't enjoy trying to get out. He was super. So a lot of things there on the website. And I guess the final thing I was mentioning there is the stats. This person talking about how they love reading our stat pages. They love the updates. And they were talking about the different philosophies and the great groups of coaches. And they were talking about how it seems like, volleyball and the basketball and the baseball and the different things going on, and they really wish all sports would get on board. Again, right. I've always taken the stance. I kind of stay out of that as a coach. As a website, we offer the service there. Obviously, if they come into us, we're going to get them on there. So again, we hope to see those, because again, I think it is neat. It's neat for the kids to see it on there. It's neat for the coaches just to kind of go through as you get closer to all league time. It's awesome for the fans, just people that are fans of the game like to go on there. Because if you follow your team, you might only see a kid from Adina, say, you know, two times in a year. So you kind of like to get on there and see, how's this kid doing? How's this kid doing? If a kid was 0-4 for you against you one night, but you see on the website that he's hitting 485, well, you obviously know that kid can hit a little bit, that type of thing. I just think there's a lot of things that the stat page offers. Before we get out of here this week, Jeremy, anything there in the inbox there that you want to respond to or have an opinion on?
Well, I just think hitting on the stats, I think, you know, everybody knows that stats to an extent are arbitrary, and, you know, everybody's going to find faults with, you know, so-and-so's bookkeeper or whatever, you know, whether it's an apparent or whether they're, you know, modifying or the types of defense or the types of offense that you play on in a given sport and how that might affect your stats. And they certainly don't tell the whole story, but sure. I think that the main thing that I look at when I see stats, whether it's in the newspaper, whether it's on the radio, whether it's on a website, I'm pretty sure that's a way to promote high school athletes. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what, you know, our goal is, to promote as best we can. And, you know, you think about the feedback that we get. I actually had some correspondence with a couple college coaches regarding the availability and the access of whether it be film or stats or just being able to follow a league. And, you know, we got some compliments for you and the website, Shane, talking about just the fact that, well, I understand what kind of volleyball league the SVC is, and you know, I can keep up to date on the website and find out what's going on and give me a better key at some of those kids. So don't think for a second that college coaches and other individuals don't share that information. So the more you can promote the athletes, you never know what avenues that might lead. Because I had an opportunity to talk to some folks at the university level this weekend while I was at a softball tournament, and you know, kind of pick their brain a little bit, and those are some things that came up. So at the very least, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, who's hitting 586 and who's hitting 327. Sometimes it's just seeing those names up there, regardless.
Well, it really is. It's a great way to promote kids and promote the league, and I'm glad you shared that with us. Those are the types of things that really make us feel good here at SVCSportsZone.com. And fans, we want to continue to have you drive the show. Please let us know. Call us 740-569-3254. Email me in the inbox there at admin1@SVCSportsZone.com. Let us know what you want Jeremy and myself to be talking about here on SVC Sports Talk. So with that in mind, SVC fans, we hope you will join us again next week. So for Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, and all the other great sponsors on the website, and of course for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.